Hello, everybody. This is Bree.
And this is Lauren.
And we're inviting you to pause for a moment with Brevard Zoo.
Happy February, everybody. So we are celebrating our Florida Black Bears this month.
So if you didn't know, most Florida Black Bears are born around the month of February while their moms are hibernating.
The easiest labor ever.
So all three of our bears have a February birthday. To celebrate, we couldn't think of two better people to bring on the podcast than Lauren Henson, our Director of Animal Programs, and Mark Franzen, our Wild Florida Area Supervisor, aka Mama and Papa Bear. Welcome, guys.
All right. Can you guys tell us about each of your jobs? What does the Director of Animal Programs do? And then what does the Area Supervisor for Wild Florida do?
So basically, I just oversee the animals that we have here at the zoo and the staff that takes care of them.
That sounds really simple, but I feel like it's probably not.
It's not.
There's a lot of animals. There's a lot of staff. And everybody has issues, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Mark, what does the Area Supervisor for Wild Florida do?
So a little bit similar to Lauren, I just have a much smaller team of people, and we focus primarily on the Florida native animals, and our black bears are a huge part of that.
How long have each of you been here at the zoo?
I will be 9 years this May.
Ooh.
I'm just over five.
Nice. Before we talk about each of our bears, I think we need to go back to the zoo's commitment to creating a space and program to help Florida black bears. So if you live in an area that's not in the natural range for bears, you might not know that there's sometimes tension between bears and people. So can we talk about the causes of those tensions a little bit?
So there's a lot of what you would call conflict between humans and bears, mostly because bears are, there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of people, so there's a lot of overlap. And bears don't understand that they're walking through your backyard or walking through a space where they're not supposed to. They're just going along looking for food for the most part, and then they will end up in situations where they're in someone's yard and the person either doesn't know what to do, is scared, because for the most part, what you see on movies portrays bears as this big, scary, growling, open mouth animals, when in reality, they're flighty animals that will almost always choose to run rather than fight. But people don't know that. They know what they've learned throughout their lives. So they get scared. And then there's other people who think that they're doing good by feeding them, putting out food for them. Then these bears become conditioned to getting that food. And then they go to the next person's house and they want to know where the food is. And they're looking to get in the house. And this is what causes the most issues with people and bears.
Yeah, the idea of humans and bears living together, like they're around, the interactions are inevitable, it's going to happen. And Florida is this kind of unique state in a way where we have a healthy bear population and a very healthy human population too. There's you know, a lot of people that live in Florida, and any major city that you want to travel to, you're driving through bear habitat, so they're out there.
It's not so much, you know, being careful around bears. It's more...
It's learning how to live where there's bears near and to be able to compromise certain things and, you know, be aware that they're there. Yeah.
So understanding that there's this conflict between people and bears, the zoo started building a home for rescued black bears. And our first resident was Queen Bee Cheyenne, official name. Don't anybody talk to me about any different name for her. Would one of you be up for sharing Cheyenne's story?
Cheyenne is a bear who comes...
She's a bear.
She's a bear. She's not a queen bee.
Hi!
She will forever be known as the big bear.
The big bear.
Even though she's probably going to be the smallest of all the bears. But she's a black bear that comes to us from the area right outside Tallahassee. And the short version of Cheyenne's story is that essentially she was being fed by people in their backyard. Cheyenne became accustomed to that as her primary source of food, and it led to a severe lack of nutrition in Cheyenne, and also just her natural fear of humans was essentially gone. And I think that pretty much her first day here proved that. You know, this was a bear who had spent the first year and a half of her life not near humans at all, And she showed up at the zoo and she came over and ate food from people's hands right away.
Wow.
So I think getting her to come live here at Brevard Zoo is really best case scenario for her, because really other options for her were not looking so good.
Yeah, she was never going to gain that fear back or that caution back.
Yeah, she was right at the age where she wasn't really a cub anymore, but she was young enough where she could get accustomed to living in human care and do well, which isn't always the case for an adult. That's why you don't see adult black bears being taken if there's a conflict between humans and put in a zoo, because they've been out there. They are wild bears, and it's very hard to adjust to living in human care. But because she was younger, we got her like right at that time where it could go either way. And yeah, that first day I remember her here, just we were prepared for like the TV, like wild bears.
Big scary bear.
And she came, just sat at the front of the mesh and took food from our hands. And we were like, oh, okay, that's not what
this
we
is going to be relaxed. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. So in early 2019, Cheyenne was moved into her new zoo bear-friendly habitat in our Wild Florida Loop. So what was it like building a home for this species that was brand new to the zoo? And what did we learn from caring from her?
So we looked at a lot of different factors when building the habitat. We knew that bears are very intelligent. They spend a lot of time foraging for food. They have, you know, these natural behaviors that we wanted to allow them to do, and how do we build a habitat that would allow that. So we looked at all those types of things, complexity, giving them the ability to climb, to retreat away from people if they wanted to dig, all these kinds of things that bears do. And then we got Cheyenne and we learned a lot.
Like what?
That they need even more than we originally thought. And that we needed to adjust how we care for them based on how they would be in certain seasons of time. So that her behavior would be totally different in the winter and in the summer and in the fall. And how do we adjust, not necessarily just through the building of the habitat, but what we do to make them comfortable throughout those times?
This seems like a duh question. Why go along with what Cheyenne's doing? Why not just go like, hey, this is the schedule, this is how things are gonna happen, like you're just gonna have to figure it out, chick.
Well, first part is that is not really how we do anything at this zoo. we're wanting to as much as possible be able to do what these animals would be doing naturally. Now obviously that's a lot harder when you have an animal from Africa and you're trying to figure out how to make it work in Florida. But black bears live here, so we really were like, there's no reason why they couldn't be doing, you know, 80% of the behaviors that they would be doing anyway, because they live right here. I mean, they live 30 minutes from here, and I think that's why we push so much to make sure that they can go through everything that they would be going through.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think we've maybe found out a little bit after the fact here, but we set the bear habitat up for a lot of change to be feasible. You know, it wasn't like a hard set in stone, this is the bear habitat, it will never change ever again. We had to experience what it was like to take care of one bear and now two and now three, but that's allowed us to make changes to better their welfare, to adjust to seasonal changes. One of my favorite things that I say to my team all the time is it's their world and we're just living in it.
Oh.
So, you know, you just have to basically listen to them and figure out what to do.
Yeah, they've taught us, you know, everything that we've needed to change, and we're just good in that way. So, you know, if the habitat's not working or something's not working, we just change it. And that's what we've learned from basically Cheyenne and then getting the others, you know, even more.
Do you think that's a really important trait to have as someone who cares for animals, is flexibility?
Oh, yeah. You most certainly have to be flexible to work here.
Yeah. Write it in the job description.
You know, you can say that you're an expert in something, and sure, you know a lot, but if you're not willing to learn one more thing, two more things, then then it's not really what we're going for here.
Yeah, that makes sense. Then you're never really the expert, right?
Right, yeah.
All right. So about a year after Cheyenne moved into her habitat, we got a second call to help a Florida black bear cub. How did we learn about Brody?
So we got a call from FWC, someone who manages the bear program there. And it was basically just a heads up that there was a possibility. They had found an abandoned cub in Ocala National Forest, but they were going to try a couple of different things to see if they could get the mom to come back, playing bear cub noises, trying to scent certain areas and things, like look on video and watch. But it was a very small cub, and it was cooler out because it was February and raining, and at that point they just decided that, you know, this cub wasn't going to make it. So they called us to see if we would be able to take care of him, and that was kind of how that started. He was only about 3 weeks old, I believe. 3 pounds or a little under 3 pounds. And very lucky to have survived. He had a lot of medical issues, upper respiratory infections that ended up to pneumonia because he was just left and it was cold and stuff. So, yeah, that is a call that we never thought we would get. And very glad we did.
Yeah. What was that like for you? Because for people who don't know, Lauren is kind of our, Lauren Henson is kind of our, Lauren Delgado wishes that she was.
I got my own bear cub at home. I don't need another one. Thank you.
Yeah. Lauren Henson is our kind of animal baby raiser, like hand raiser here at the zoo. So you've raised quite a few different baby animals, right? You've raised a Joey kangaroo, a couple of sloth babies, right? So these animals that needed to be hand reared for various different reasons. So what was it like for you to get that call that you needed to hand raise a little baby bear cub? You had never done that before, right?
No, I had never raised a bear cub before. And the other manager at the time who was actually like taking the calls and stuff was updating me because, you know, I could tell that I was a person that hand rears things. So it was like automatically going to go on my plate. But I was very like skeptical that it was actually going to happen. So I really didn't focus too hard on it till we got the actual call that he was coming. And then it was basically just like, here you go. Take care of this cub.
Figure this out.
Yep. And from there, I just did a ton of research. Obviously, there's similarities raising any baby, like keeping them warm, fed, all those different types of things that are the same no matter what species. But I didn't have bear experience, so I just read books, papers, talked to other facilities, anything that I could get information from to figure out, you know, because I don't just want to, like, I do want to keep the animal alive, but I also want them to have the best that they need.
Right.
What was it like raising a bear cub compared to all these other animals that you've raised?
Pretty different and more difficult.
How so?
The other, like, you know, the kangaroo and the sloth, they're fairly contained and limited in their, you know, for the first very long time, a Joey is in the pouch. They come out of the pouch to have a little bit of activity, and then they want directly back in the pouch. A sloth just wants to be holding on to something, whether that be you or a toy. A bear is more, I guess, like having a human child. You know, they want to get into everything. They want to break things, run away, jump on things, you know, just very, very active. And then him specifically, he was, you know, had some medical issues. So he was a little more difficult and would sometimes be upset, cry, you know, he didn't want to be alone. So, you know, it wasn't where you could just kind of put him on a stuffed toy and he would be okay. He really needed the interaction because bear cubs are with their moms for almost 2 years. They have a very close relationship. And because he had no siblings either, which oftentimes bears have siblings and they're doing all their playing and everything and they get that energy out. So he didn't have that. So it's basically me to
lucky you.
Try and be as best of a bear mom and sibling as possible.
It's incredible. I think it's interesting because a lot of people hear that and they're like, oh, I'm so jealous. Like, but then they don't realize what actually goes into any of this. It's a lot of work.
Oh yeah. It was hard. I mean, obviously besides the getting up every 2 hours to feed around the clock and mentally difficult. Definitely the little bears have been the hardest animals, but the most rewarding.
No. Why the most rewarding?
Their personalities. They're just, I don't know, that relationship that they have with their mom is very intense, and I think seeing them be able to do that with a human was just really interesting to me, to learn their behaviors and be able to communicate with them in the same way, you know, in some of the same ways that their mom would, like when they smell your breath, and that's how they know who you are and what your intentions are and those things.
What are your intentions?
And what you ate.
And to this day, have some. Brody's favorite thing, yes. Smelling breath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can actually reward him like for trained behaviors by blowing your breath in his face.
No way. So
funny. And he like goes into a trance.
Yeah.
He's just like thinking, oh, yeah. You ate like a bagel today. And
he thinks it a lot, and then like sometimes he tries to taste it too.
Yes. Every once in a while, like, the tongue comes out into your mouth.
Oh,
yeah. So there's a short list of people who have had Brody's tongue in their mouth.
Okay. I didn't think we were going to go to this place. I don't know.
So we know Lauren Henson is one of them. Are you one of them, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Come on.
Duh.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm like sad or happy that I'm not on that list.
I think I'm okay. I think I'll pass. Yeah. Thank you.
I feel like you can't decide before it's happened.
It's just too late.
That's fine. Might be the best thing I've ever happened to you.
Yeah.
That's true. Only one way to find out.
Eat your yogurt in the morning. Yeah. Come on down.
What are both of your, I think we kind of answered this a little bit, but what are both of your relationships with Brody like now? Like, does he specifically react when he sees either one of you?
He definitely has a different relationship with different people. I think we see different behaviors from him when I'm around versus when you're around versus when other keepers who he's known for a long time, but just not as long, or who weren't as involved with his care in the first few months of his life. It's definitely different.
Yeah, so Brody was a COVID baby, we can call him. Aww. So he happened right as everything started with the pandemic. So we had split the animal care staff into two teams on two separate sides of the week, so there was no overlap. So he didn't meet half of the people here for a long time, and he had a very core group of people that took care of him as baby. So he's very close with those individuals, even though he likes all the other keepers and everything, but people who weren't a part of him growing up, he has a different relationship.
What do you think he thinks of them as? Are they like siblings to him? Are they just like really close bear friends?
I think
so. I'm not sure what goes on in his head.
I think he knows I'm his mom.
Yeah.
He knows that the other group of people that cared for him were his siblings, because his behavior is very different with me and with them. Even though we were together, he played very hard with the keepers who were there, and he was more respectful of me if I were to, you know, not want him to do something or not play really rough at times, and then he would be really hard on the other staff. So I definitely think he thought of them as keepers. As far as the newer people that have come about, yeah, I'm not sure. He does seem to kind of just like everyone as maybe his friends.
Everyone so is my friend.
Yeah, his mom, siblings, and then his friends.
Are you more of like a fun uncle?
Yeah, something like that.
Not Papa Bear.
I can definitely say like the difference being in with him when he was 4 or 5 months old, like, hands down, he would try to play as hard as he possibly could with me, with a couple of other people who were there. And then Lauren would walk in and he's like the sweetest little bear ever.
Oh. Yep.
So you've just been beaten up by a bear, yeah. And then mom comes in. You're like, oh, of course you're going to act good with mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. He knew. And if you watch, like, bear cub families when they have multiple siblings, yeah, they wrestle and really beat each other up pretty hard, but they don't do that to mom.
No.
You got the good job.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've gotten to see this in real life with poor Brody, because remember not too long ago when you said, we never expected to get this call for Brody.
Yes.
Then what happened?
Well, after I was told it was very rare, and I just assumed that that would never happen again, we got a call about another cub that could potentially need help. This was nothing medically wrong with her, but just that her mom had abandoned her in the den. So it was, again, got kind of a heads up that it could be a possibility, but I'm thinking, no, you know, it's definitely not going to happen. It's it's just not possible. Like, what are the chances? And then get a call a few days later that this bear cub needs to be taken care of. So mom didn't come back for 48 hours. They monitored. They knew where she was, but she was, I think, over an hour away, and it had been 48 hours, and this cub hadn't eaten, is alone. So that's, you know, when they make the call that this isn't going to be good. So that's how we got Betty Bear.
That's the short story.
Yeah, that's the very, very yes. short story of that.
And Betty, we didn't plan for Betty to join our zoo officially.
No. So Betty was going to be, she was very small also. I think she was 3 pounds as well, although a little farther along than Brody was. But still, she's needed to drink a bottle every 2 hours. So the plan for her was to try and rehabilitate her and send her back into her natural range. Now, that's not been done often here with little cubs like that. So this was something that we were going to try and see what happened. So basically, I took care of her. She never saw any other people. I didn't talk around her. I didn't interact with her much, just enough to keep her, you know, from losing her mind because she's alone. And, you know, we tried for about a month. That was how it went. And then she went to the rehab facility to be paired up with another little cub. And she did great with the cub and just was a little too interested in people and was potentially going to teach those other cubs bad habits.
Oh.
So, so we got the call that she would be coming back here. And, you know, it's hard to say because their personalities, they all have different personalities. You know, Brody as a baby was scared of everything and everyone, and he had been raised by me. So she came out of that crate first day, no fear of anything. She's still that way. She had no fear about going with the other bears, or just nothing phases her. So it's hard to say if some of it is personality that played into that. You know, she was attached to me, but she never knew any other humans. But just their personalities are completely opposite. It's so interesting to see them both grow up and just total other sides of the page.
Yeah. They're like real siblings. You can be raised by the same yes. people, now completely different.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we like intentionally exposed Brody to as many Anything. Things mm-hmm. as possible, knowing that he was going to live at the zoo
yeah.
for the rest of his life. And Betty was the complete opposite. It was, Lauren would text me and be like, hey, can you do this real quick so that you're in and out and she never sees you? And yeah, I think you were the only person that Betty ever saw.
Yeah.
But somehow she has no fear.
Yeah, of anyone, anything.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to see how that works and think about it for the future of, you know, rehabbing young cubs, even though it's never going to happen again because it's very rare.
Knock on wood somewhere.
Yeah.
Oof. What? It's almost... I guess it is February.
It
huh?
is. It is February. It is February.
Bears are being born right now.
Right now. Aww. So in a couple months, right check back in. Now.
Right this minute.
Oh, my goodness. What was it like welcoming Betty back? Because I imagine that's got to be kind of like, you got to feel a little torn, right? Like, we want the best for Betty. We want her to go back to her natural range. But also, we love Betty.
Yeah, let's talk about how hard it was for Betty to go away first. Yeah, so the hard part of that is, yeah, you want, I mean, for us, either scenario was going to be great. If we got her back or if she went out to wild, I think we'd all be happy. The hard part is, you know, her going and then you don't know anything and just kind of waiting and waiting, waiting to see if she was going to go back out and I could see her on her release day or she was going to be coming back. And I think it was probably about a month, felt like a really long time that we got the call saying that it's probably not going to work, that we would take her back. And then, you know, the call of, okay, come get her.
Yeah. What was it like for you to meet Betty, Mark?
So I knew of Betty, obviously. Sure. I indirectly helped out do a lot of just the on-site stuff for her when we still had the intention of rehabbing for release. And then it was like two or three times a day, me being like, hey, Lauren, are we... What's going on with Betty? You hear any
meanwhile,
news?
Lauren's like, please.
I know.
I'm taking this so hard.
Just tell me. Yeah. And then, you know, finally getting that confirmation again, happy with it one way or the other. Ultimately, though, probably for the best if she was going to be more of a negative influence on other bear cubs, you know, getting her back here and being able to use her story as one that we can share with everyone. But that moment that we found out, it was like just this whirlwind of things going on in my head, and I'm sure in everyone who plays a part in its head, like, what do we have to do? Which space do we have to set up? How can we modify and adapt and do all these things? Like, we had pretty much set up our bear habitat for Cheyenne and Brody, and it was good. And then how do we incorporate one more into that?
Yeah.
So kind of coming up with that, getting appropriate supplies and all of the things that go into it was this rush.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about introductions, how we introduced her to Cheyenne and Brody and how that's going to this day?
Yeah. Our habitat is set up in a really nice way where there's no solid walls. So they can see each other, they can smell each other, they can hear each other 24/7. So in a way, they're just living next to each other from the moment that they arrive at the habitat. So that initial exposure, I think, kind of helps out really well. And they can basically tell us, and we can see it right in front of us when they're comfortable, when they're not. And that kind of gives us an idea as to what our plan for an actual share the same space introduction might be.
Yeah, we could tell right away that Cheyenne was not happy with the new addition.
She's the queen.
She was very clear that she didn't want to have any interaction with Betty. Betty, on the other hand, wanted to hang out with anybody. Aww. Like, it didn't, she didn't understand those cues.
Buddy.
But again, no fear. You know, another full-grown female bear, you know, slapping the mesh and vocalizing, Betty, nothing. Just like...
Yeah, that's very much a cue from Cheyenne to, like, get lost.
Yeah. Yes.
Go somewhere else.
Betty was like, you said you did want to be best friends.
Yeah, okay. She's still determined. Brody, we could tell right away that there was a big interest with each other, and they would sit next to the mesh. They would do little head throws, which is like a play behavior through the mesh. So we knew pretty early on that they wanted to be friends. The issue we had to overcome was the fact that Brody is 300 pounds and, you know, Betty was
40, 50
pounds. Yeah.
And like the natural history of the black bear tells us unrelated male probably isn't going to be friends with unrelated female.
Oh. Yeah. especially a cub that's...
Yeah.
Not his cub.
Yeah, just really any, you know, if he was trying to mate with a female or going in their territory, like, they will kill cubs at times. So less natural than...
Yeah, so that sits in the back of our head while we mm-hmm. watch these bears just seemingly love each other through the mesh.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And I find it interesting that Cheyenne was not about Buddy from day one.
Day one with Brody, she was very interested in him, and she would make vocalizations like a mom would. Mm-hmm. And when we had first put them together, you know, she played with him. And so it was interesting that she just decided round two, nope, not doing it. Not doing it again.
I had enough with Brody.
Yeah. Aww. But, you know, in that amount of time, she had matured. So a lot of things had changed since that time. And she's less of a young female, more of a mature female who would be having her own cubs. And they don't necessarily interact often with other females, you know, at certain times when there's tons of space and tons of food. Yeah, but there's not normally a couple of females just hanging out together. So I think that's where we're at with her now. And with Brody, I think he's just a different individual. He is still a cub. He feel, you know, he acts like a cub. So for him, it was more of, now I have a sibling to play with.
Oh.
Not so much of, I'm a big male and got to get this cub out of here.
So Brody and Betty share space together a lot now, right?
Yeah, pretty much every day for the majority of the time that we're here, which is, it's been really fun to see.
Oh, how are they together?
They're... It's what I always wished for Brody. Is that he could have a sibling to play with. So they're just constantly wrestling around, playing. They'll separate to eat and do different things. But, I mean, they're very active together. He was very gentle with her. She's, you know, going to be the boss. You can see it, even though she's
she wails so much on him smaller. Sometimes.
Yeah. So wow. He's the one with all the little scratches on his face. So. And yeah, he's like quadruple the size of her. But I mean, for him, the change in his personality has been huge. You know, going from, you know, he's a happy bear, but he didn't get to do those behaviors on a regular basis because of Cheyenne, you know, sometimes being okay with him and sometimes not. So he was very nervous and he never knew when she would be upset. I think now his confidence is huge because he just knows his positive experience every time.
Yeah, and it was a transition for him too, because we have had success seeing playful behavior between Brody and Cheyenne. Not in the last year, but, you know, two and a half years ago, similar ages of... Yeah. Brody and Betty now, but Brody learned this way of playing with other bears from Cheyenne, but Cheyenne would also be a little bit quicker to kind of tell him off and put her foot down on certain things. So seeing Brody go into playing with Betty expecting that and then realizing, oh, this is much different. There's definitely this like 2 to 3 week period where he would expect Betty to interact with him like Cheyenne had, but Betty's just a totally different bear. And
yeah, you could see the change, like, yeah, before our eyes, like the first introduction going out and him standing up on his hind legs and feeling that he had to be big and she was going to chase him or bite him, to then, oh, I can lay on my back and she can just jump on me and nothing's going to happen. So yeah, it was really good to see that.
What do we do for our bears to allow them to show their natural behaviors?
Everything.
Yeah.
That's like the big picture of what we're even doing here, is like, let them be bears. You know, we talk a lot about Brody and Betty interacting with each other, being seemingly best friends, and that's all good and great. But it's also good and great that Cheyenne wants nothing to do with them, because that's what she should be
more
doing.
Natural, yeah.
So yeah, it's not as fun to see, but from my perspective, it's so cool that she is a bear and she's not influenced by a lot of things going on around her. She still has that natural instinct to do what she should be doing. And really, it's like up to us on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis to just see their behavior and adapt their care based on it. So we see now, middle of winter, Cheyenne's asleep. We haven't even offered her food in 3 or 4 weeks. If we did, she would turn her nose to it. Like, she doesn't want it. It's not something that she normally would do in the middle of February. And it is different bear to bear too. Like, Brody and Betty are still active. They're still interested in eating, but it's also different as to what they do. And then changing it season to season in the spring, you know, you come out of this more dormant state from the winter and start getting more of an appetite. Summer, we enter breeding season. And now as our bears are getting older, they're more mature and how their behavior changes with each other. And then fall, we get into hyperphagia where really they just eat and they eat and they eat. And it's hard for us to keep up with being able to provide enough food for them.
Yeah. And I think sometimes that can be a difficult thing for, you know, a person working at a zoo taking care of animals is to, you know, say in the fall, we're going to give them buckets and buckets of food. Like, we're not regulating what they're eating. They can eat as much as they want. But then knowing in the winter that we're going to stop giving Cheyenne food, and that can be really difficult for someone in the zoo world to say, I'm just not feeding my animal.
Sure.
But it is what would normally happen, and we see her go through that behavior. She doesn't use the bathroom. She doesn't drink water. She sleeps. And actually, by giving her the food is going against what would be happening naturally, and that's actually more of a harm than just understanding and saying, okay, it's okay, I'm not feeding my animal right now. That's just a normal, it's normal for this animal. And the same with Brody and Betty. Male black bears don't necessarily, you know, sleep for that long, and they make little beds and they'll just take naps and things. But and cubs, yeah, I mean, full of energy, just wanting to play. But in the future, Betty probably will go in a den and sleep, and Brody will be hanging out just by himself again.
Oh. I think people will be surprised to hear that our bears go into this like sleep state, because you think of like hibernation and it's up north where it's really, really cold. And it's cold in Florida. Okay. I don't want to argue with anybody. It's been really cold. Okay. I don't want to argue with anybody.
Very pleasant.
All right.
Okay.
If you say so.
But our bears do this because in the winter month, there's just typically less food in Florida. It's not necessarily about the cold, right?
No, it's more about the change in the lighting, basically shorter days, less food availability, but also females are going to den to have offspring as well. And, you know, a big part of it is conserving all that energy and food storage to be able to bring up cubs. So that's why the males don't, you know, fully go into that kind of state.
That's interesting. And Cheyenne has the option to go into dens, although she yes. hasn't this one. She's allowed to do what she wants, but we have dens that we've built for them. Can we talk a little bit about the den?
Yeah, Cheyenne is definitely testing our ability to adapt in the moment as far as what we need to do to provide for her. But it would have been fall of 2021.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what year it is. We made this big jump to put some in-ground dens, if you will. They're really just a concrete structure that we sunk into the ground, covered it with dirt and rocks, make it look natural. But it's an option for whichever bear would choose to dig down into the ground and stay there for a little bit. We were lucky enough to have funding available to put cameras inside so we could monitor 24/7, make sure that all is well that's going on in the den. And we saw Cheyenne, thankfully, utilize it last winter for about 2 months. I'd say really six, seven weeks of just like full on in the den, didn't come out at all. And then a couple weeks on either end where she was around sleeping on top of it when we first got in the morning, and then inside of it during the day. This year, we wanted to make a switch and see if we could encourage her to choose a new spot to den, mostly because we wanted Brody and Betty to be able to be out for zoo guests to see in the main habitat. And Cheyenne just like told us that this option that we created for her was absolute garbage. No, no way was she going to go in that. I mean, she maybe stuck her head in there one or two times.
Yeah. Same exact den as the
other. Of course.
Same thing. Same thing, just different spot.
This one was garbage, though.
Yeah, this one was garbage. The few times that she did stick her head in there, like, me and all my teammates are cheering in our office because, like, oh, yes, it's happening. But no. Yeah, that was not a suitable space for her. But, you know, doing as we should, we just listened to her and watched her behavior, saw what she was telling us. She told us a different spot was more to her likings. And literally that afternoon, we were demolishing things in the night house to make that space more suitable for her. And she sleeps. That's where she is now.
She's denning. So we don't have a camera back there yet, correct?
We don't have the same type of view. We have cameras that show the outside of it. And then we have since acquired a little...
It's like a scope camera.
So guests necessarily aren't able to see and check her denning like they would have been last year, but you guys are able to keep an eye on her and make sure everything's going good.
Yeah, we do have a screen set up in front of the habitat like we did last year, because a lot of times she'll sleep right outside of the den, so people can still see that she's there and sleeping. And then sometimes she goes in the den, you can't see, but we can still at least use that to educate people.
Absolutely.
I love the dens. It makes me so happy. That was like one of the first things I got to do when I came to the zoo. I threw myself, Mark let me throw myself, not into the den, but like stick a camera into the den.
You were pretty close.
Yeah. For a second, I was like, unoccupied. Do I go in? Do I not go in?
Mark's been in there a lot of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All unoccupied by bears, right?
Of course. Yes.
Always unoccupied.
Okay. Always unoccupied.
Far easier to get in and out of if you're just like a smaller human. And we talked before about the difference between a director level position and a supervisor or a keeper level. Yes. The director sits at the desk and watches you fumble around in the bear den.
Still shots and videos so I can save them and play them for others.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. That's creating a fun work environment.
And though, the supervisor is covered in dirt. Can't see anything. Trying to figure out what is going on.
Feels right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feels like as it should be. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll have to test that out.
What are you trying to throw me in?
I don't know. We'll figure something out. All right. How else do we help our bears with their natural behaviors? We've talked about dens. We've talked about the seasons. I've noticed you guys putting like a lot of toys, a lot of cool things, the wobble drink.
It's like an evolving habitat. It's never the same thing one day after the next. And even now, we, you know, 4 years into having a bear habitat, we just gave them completely new options to climb trees. So it's never a stagnant thing. There's always things that we can be doing, whether it be the simple, you know, we put your food in this Kong, we put your food in this type of ball that has holes in it, or it's aiming at more not food related, not eating related behaviors where we can introduce new scents, new substrates, all sorts of new things. Like you name it, we can probably figure out a way to allow bears to choose whether or not they want to interact with it.
Yeah, very cool. What about the EED?
Yeah, the EED, which is the Environmental Enrichment Device, as built for us by Animal Enrichment Systems. Yeah, so we have all these simple things that we prepare on a daily basis for the bears. But then we have these more complex things, and the EED being one of them, where it's far beyond my ability to like even understand how it's constructed. But essentially, there's this little light that exists on the side of it. And when the light is on, that means that a motion sensor is activated. So you being a bear, you see that the light is on, you go over to the motion sensor, you activate it, and then a leaf blower blows whatever food we put inside of it through a piece of PVC pipe over the top fence of the habitat, and it's basically a way for the bears to control when diet items are offered to them.
Yeah.
And then they get to hunt for seeds and nuts and whatever else is in there.
It, the leaf blower blows things all over the place. It's not just like a one and done kind of thing. It's
very cool.
Yeah, and we have multiple other items like that that are automatic, so they're not necessarily associating us with the food. Feeders that'll go off on a timer, or feeders that will drop food down, you know, through a belt system, things like that, besides all our normal enrichment. And then, yeah, I think the giving them options to climb has been really big. And since the 5 years since we built the habitat, we've probably, you know, looked it over a few times and said, hey, this tree is okay. We can give them this tree to climb. And it's great to see them use it. Cheyenne sleeps up in the top of trees. She does the normal bear behavior. If she gets nervous or there's a storm, she goes up in a tree. Betty also will like to go up in trees. Brody's a little slower.
Brody's also 300 pounds now. Can he make it up that tree? Oh, gosh.
He tries sometimes.
So you talked a lot about all the amazing things that we do for bears here. What's next for bears at Brevard Zoo?
Well, it's February, so...
We're saying, give us a couple months.
Keep your phones on.
So we have a lot of things in store for bears. I think we're always thinking of ways to improve, give them more choice and control. We'd love to be able to give them some more space, potentially help out with bear rehab, similar to what we did with Betty. Just hopefully successful this time.
Yes, I think it's successful. Just not.
Yes, it was successful for us.
Yeah,
right.
And I think that she's going to have a very good life here. But still, we'd love to be able to help with more things that come up with bear cubs and things like that.
Cool. All right. I have one more question. We forgot to put this down. What advice would you have for people who want to do what you guys do?
Well, going to school is helpful. But more helpful than that is spending time either at, you know, your local zoo or someplace where you can volunteer, intern, and get more hands-on to be able to understand that there's so much in this job. It's not the what you see on TV where you just play with animals all day. There's so much behind every decision that we make. Animal wellness is always the number one factor behind basically everything we do. And in order to be able to do that, you have to be educated on the most current ways of taking care of animals, animal welfare, research, behavior, being able to understand the needs of the species. So I think really just being determined and having a passion for it is what would drive you. And, you know, the education is great, but really getting in there and doing it for me is what taught me.
Yeah, and the opportunities are there. Like if you want it and you stick to it, like, you'll get it. It might not be at the zoo of your choice, it might not be with the animals of your choice, but I think if you asked both of us 5 years ago, would you ever be doing this for black bears, we'd both be like, probably not. Like, we had no idea that this was that this was a part of our future. So just also understanding that you might have an idea of what you want to do, but certainly be open to adapting and trying new things along the way. Sure, there's certain times when you know what you want to do, you know the type of animal you want to work with, and that's certainly what you should strive to do. But again, be flexible in that. Realize that there's value in taking care of all kinds of different animals.
Yeah, you're still learning. You're learning behavior, animal wellness, no matter what species.
And like Lauren said, the TV shows show like a very small fraction of what our day-to-day is truly like. The ability to interact with bear cubs is like once in a lifetime, somehow twice in a lifetime. But those kind of things are few and far between. More often, it's a lot of physical grunt work, but rewarding. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love it.
Also, we should point out, Lauren just got a horse, correct?
Yeah.
And named it Bear.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course.
But hang on. When did you get this horse?
Like a month ago.
Okay. I had a human child.
I know.
Like a year yes. ago. His middle name is Bear. So let's just put that out there for whoever wants to listen.
We love that.
I named something first after bears.
So Lauren stole your idea, basically.
I couldn't give Brody's name away. I just couldn't. I thought about naming things Brody, but...
That's him.
It's only one Brody.
Yeah.
Bear exactly. Brody.
Awesome, guys. Well, I think we're out of questions for you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe to our channel. And if you have any questions about animal wellness, conservation, education, anything zoo related, send us an email. So you can email us at podcast@brevardzoo.org. That will go directly to us, and we can ask those questions to people who are directly in the field doing this every single day and get those questions answered for you. We're looking forward to hearing from you.